I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of time. To become a part of time.
Everybody, and welcome again to ET Yoga. Well, if you're an old-time ET Yoga fan, I think you're going to like the show tonight because it's going to be super jam-packed with information. Highly recommend our listening audience to grab a paper and pencil because I'm going to be dropping lots of little pearls along the way that you want to research later. And we'll be talking about who we are, where we came from, and details about our ancestral heritage, and a host of other topics that it's going to be like a popcorn machine. So before we get into all of that, I'd like to kick off the program in the usual manner, setting the tone, the vibration for what's to follow with a little bit of Japa Yoga. It's a bit of mantra repetition, and it'll be led by Sri Swami Satchidananda. So if the guys in the booth would play that short clip now, that would be much appreciated.
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Hari.
Hari Hari.
Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Hari Hari
Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Hari Hari
Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Hari Hari
Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Hari
Om Hari 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 Om
Hari
Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Hari
Om Hari Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Om Hari
Om Hari Om Hari 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 Om Om Hari Om Hari Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Om Hari Om Hari Om
Hari 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 Om
Hari Om Hari Om
Hari Om Hari 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 Om Hari Om Hari Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Om Hari Om Hari
Om Hari Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Om Hari Om
Hari Om Hari Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Om
Om Hari Om Hari Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Om Hari 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 Om
Hari 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 Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Hari Hari
Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Hari Hari
Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Hari Hari
Om Hari 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 Om Om Hari 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 Om
Hari
Om Hari 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 Om
Hari
Om Hari 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 Om
Hari
Om Hari Om Hari Om
Om
Hari Om Hari Om Om Hari 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 Om
Hari
Om Hari Om Hari Om
Om
Hari 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 Om
Hari
Om Hari Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Om Hari Om Hari Om
Hari Om Hari Om
Hari Om Hari Om
Hari Hari Om
Thank you.
Yes, that was Sri Swami Sachidananda reading a little bit of Japa Yoga. Sri Swami was my spiritual teacher, and he passed on in 2002. And that clip was back from the 1970s. I'd like to, at this time, take this opportunity to read my usual disclaimer that this program was created in order to share the information about the positive and most effective benefits and insights of ET Yoga. It is therefore for educational purposes, and although thought to be accurate, is provided as is and without warranty of any kind, either expressed or unexpressed or implied. Please note that ET Yoga is not a substitute for medical care. Information is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. You should always consult with the appropriate health practitioner in case of any medical condition. If you're a longtime listener of ET Yoga, you'll also know that I applaud those in the medical field who are involved with emergency care. But as far as the rest of the system is concerned, I applaud your efforts to distance yourself from that system as well as Big Pharma as much as humanly possible. And I'd also, as usual, take at least a moment to give my thanks and appreciation for the ET Yoga listening audience, just for being you. You're already making a big difference in this world just by being you, and others become aware of the difference you're making when you're doing your passion. And I am so appreciative of the fact that there are so many new people coming in to listen to ET Yoga, and that can relate to the kind of information that's being presented. I'd also like to mention that, as at the top of the show, I said there's going to be lots of little pearls of wisdom dropped along the way tonight. One of those is going to be putting in information that when you do yoga pranayams, it activates junk DNA. And where did that little bit of information come from? Good old Barbara Marciniak's book, Bringers of the Dawn. And by the way, if you've never read Bringers of the Dawn, I highly recommend you do so. It's kind of one of those classics. I call Bringers of the Dawn the classic ET Yoga, not ET Yoga, but ET book, like the classic yoga book would be Paramahansa Yogananda's Autobiography of a Yogi. These are the two of the classics. And the Bringers of the Dawn in particular is coded. So when you read it, it actually will activate certain codes in you related to your DNA. So, and people aren't attracted to read the book unless they probably have some Pleiadian heritage. We'll be talking about that coming up right away because also related to the Pleiades, is a book that I came across back, I think, about 1972. It's called UFO Contact from the Pleiades. And this is all about the Billy Meyer experience. And although you've probably heard lots of disinformation about Billy, and I have my own issues with some of the stuff that he puts out, but the fact is the guy had a legitimate Pleiadian contact scenario and confirmed by multiple sources, including Bashar. And I just happen to have this book, which apparently is no longer in print, probably costs about $450 if you could find one. And I'm going to share with you information relating to our extraterrestrial heritage, which comes from Lyra Vega star system. And Billy talks about the fact that there is a craft that landed that had three beings aboard, one of whom introduced herself as Minara, from a place in the heavens near the star picture, Lyra. She said that her native planet has a population of 14 billion and belongs to a confederation of planets. She said that her people work closely with the Dals, that's D-A-L-S, and the Pleiadians on certain things, and that those intelligences were aware of her activities here. Another member aboard the ship was identified as Elena. They were both darker skinned and had long, slender forms. The Lyrans have more than one race type of beings on their planet. Minara said that her ship could travel in time as well as space and offered the mind-boggling note that her ship was constructed 300 years in our future, that it had been in use for over 250 years already. That's one to wrap your mind around. It appears that there is an ascending order of technological development here. The Pleiadians say that their technology is about 3,000 years in advance of ours, but that the Dolls are about 350 Earth years of technology ahead of them, and that they are assisted technologically by the Dolls. Now we have a race of beings from Lyra who seem to be several thousand years ahead of the Dolls, who help the Dolls and the Pleiadians in certain respects. This may give us some clue to the kind of guidance offered us by the Pleiadians. Contact with the beings from Lyra is also continuing, and more landings have taken place, including another landing in snow 12 centimeters deep where the characteristic circular landing track was melted through the snow and ice clear to the ground. The being identified as Elena returned at another time in her own ship, having signaled Meyer telepathically in advance. She arrived in still another style of spacecraft, which Meyer had not seen before. She explained that she and others like her come from a planet in the star system Vega, which is a part of the constellation Lyra, that's L-Y-R-A, as viewed from here. The Vegans, as explained to Meyer, are really descended from the early Lyrans also, as are the Pleiadians and us. Their ancestry is a little bit older than that of the Pleiadians. This was all becoming a little confusing, and so the Pleiadians offered a brief history to get it into perspective. And according to the explanation offered, the Lyrans were the original, to us at least, ancestors of our branch of our life stream of evolution. Many thousands of years ago, their civilization in Lyra reached a high technological level and they began to travel in space. They were full creatures and had control of their destiny. At a certain point in time, they fell into disagreement and divided into factions with different ideologies and different goals and objectives. They eventually went to war and destroyed much of their society and ruined their home. Escapists seeking to avoid the anticipated outcome fled from their native system and found homes in the star systems that we call the Pleiades and the Hyades. They also went to nearby Vega. In a few thousand of years, they had raised those societies to high technological levels and once again were able to travel in space. Some of the Pleiadians of Lyran ancestry on their travels discovered our planet and its nascent life evolving in a very hospitable atmosphere. They stayed and settled briefly in later Lemuria and early Atlantis, some even mixing with Earth creatures and becoming Earthmen. Those who remained apart and did not mix soon produced highly evolved technologies here, and they designed and built many wonderful machines and devices and created comforts and conveniences of all kinds. Then they came into conflict and the society became polarized into two camps, each possessing marvelous technologies. Eventually, they went to war and terrible destruction resulted. Those who could escape to other regions of space and started all over again. Some of those beings are now also visiting us occasionally. A long time later, a new wave of Pleiadians arrived to check on the descendants of their ancestors who survived the terrible war. They found survivors and again they mixed with them and assisted Earth humanity in control of its assets and producing a new technology. This society became the later Atlanteans, to raise their senses to levels that produced air and undersea travel before that civilization was also destroyed by surface war on Earth. The modern Pleiadians are descendants of the peaceful faction that settled the star group which astronomy gives that name. The Vegans assisting and visiting us now are descendants of another peaceful group that settled a planet in the Vega system. The descendants of the Lyrans, long evolved beyond the conflict stage, are now interested in our welfare and feel a special responsibility toward us since we reflect the earlier warlike tendencies of themselves. They lost much in their history of conflict and destroyed themselves several times and lost their great technological advances each time. According to the story, they even settled another hospitable planet in our solar system, the fifth one from the sun, which was actually destroyed in a war of nuclear weapons that got out of hand there. This is part of their concern about how we will use our nuclear sciences now. These Lyrans are now being helped and assisted in certain ways by their human cousins in the Pleiades and Vega and others. So, we see that although the Lyrans are much older in evolution, they're only a little ahead of the others in some technologies, they're behind in others, and are being assisted along the way by their cousins. Thus it is that so much human-like extraterrestrials are appearing in the same age in time. Some are actually linked in evolution and do apparently have a common source, and our re-emerging technology attracts their attention now, and they are here to observe and assist according to our will choices. And that's from the Pleiades, around the Billy Meier, M-E-I-E-R story. And I should point out that a lot of the Pleiadian information certainly is totally in line and consistent with yoga philosophy. In fact, if we look into some theories that are out there, when we go way back to our history, there were actually three planets that were destroyed in the Lyra system: Bila, B-I-L-A, Teka, T-E-K-A, and Merk, M-E-R-C-K. And that happened as a result of the Alpha Draconians, who were the first in this universe to have interstellar space travel. They located these peaceful human societies. And there was a conflict, and these planets were destroyed. And again, a lot of the people evacuated and found themselves in different star systems like Pleiades and Sirius, etc. And Jalela Star from the Niberian Council actually gives some even further deep history. According to their teachings, when this universe was first created, there were the Carrions and the Felines were brought from another universe. And it was the Carrions that actually manipulated their DNA with some of the primate on their world, and eventually became the first humans in the Lyra system. And from the other side, on the Carrions, they also had their DNA manipulated and combined with a primate, and the Alpha Draconians. And this was, in their teachings at least, part of this free will universe that's based in polarity. And clearly, you want to call it the good guys and the bad guys, the demons and the Alpha Draconians, each playing their role. So if that has not been confirmed to my research by any other extraterrestrial group, including the Pleiadians, however, I'll offer that information for your entertainment. Also, I think of interesting note that it's been the Anunnaki and the Alpha Draconians behind the scenes that have been running this planet for eons. And Bashar, and if you don't know about Bashar, Bashar is Esasani, now called the Shekhani, because their civilization has moved up a dimension. And Bashar actually offers through his website at bashar.org, that's B-A-S-H-A-R.org, offers some contact cards. It's much like tarot cards. And I actually have a set, and I found this to be appropriate for tonight's program, information concerning one of the contact cards called Anunnaki. Okay. And on the card, it says that in the beginning, after the creator gods from Lyra had been manifest as physical beings for countless millennia, they began to notice that their once 1,000-year lifespans were dwindling to a mere few centuries. With so much beauty yet to be experienced in the physical world, all were dismayed to find deterioration accelerating with each new generation. They decided to devote all available resources towards solving this problem, and finally, after many years, discovered a magic elixir made from gold. By drinking this divine fluid, their precious corporal forms regenerated and regained their treasured thousand-year vitality. Realizing that the amount of gold on their home world wouldn't last forever, the creator gods chose to search for more worlds rich in the yellow metal, and they eventually landed upon the ancient Earth. This planet was abundant in the remarkable ore, and the creator beings mined the ore with vigor for several hundred thousand years. Over time, they tired of this task, but were unwilling to give up for fear of degeneration would reoccur again. So one among them, a brilliant scientist, had a plan. She suggested that by infusing their own humanoid DNA into Earth's indigenous ape creatures, a new hybrid race of workers could be cultivated to mine the gold in their stead. The plan was a success, and the creator gods were excited at the degree to which the engineered species favored their physiology. Demigods taught the newly spawned Earth humans how to speak, how to work, how to grow food to sustain themselves. And what the creators didn't expect, however, was that their human workers would also learn to think for themselves. After generations of servitude spent quenching their creator's thirst for the golden elixir, the evolving humans yearned for sovereignty. They also began to understand the purpose and power of the fruits of their labor. Naturally, they desired the life-giving liquid for themselves, and they eventually beseeched Anu, the leader of their masters, for equal consideration and treatment. Anu's compassion for the humans prompted him to hold counsel with his followers to discuss the dilemma. These masters, whom the humans called Anunnaki, found themselves split in their beliefs for the first time. Some championed the humans, while the others feared there would not be enough gold to go around if humans were given the gift of longevity. Finally, the leader of all the creator beings came to a decision. Did we not make these humans in our image after our kind? They are our children and have developed in a way that must be respected. These children have earned their right to live freely. Let us leave them in peace. The Anunnaki left Earth in the care of the humans, but retained the secret of transforming gold into extended life. From that day forward, the humans have worshipped their golden god, seriously seeking to rediscover the mysterious fountain of youth their creators kept for themselves. And that's just from one page contact cards, which is full of interesting information like that, as there's about 48 cards, and they all have an interesting story to go with them. But I might also add that there's some physical evidence concerning this big secret that was kept from the humans, and that's about the gold. And what is it? It is called ORMIS, or Orbitally Rearranged Monatomic Elements. What about 10 years ago, I wrote an article based from ET Yoga Show that was based on the topic that monatomics, the word nobody knows about. Like you sit in a room full of doctors and you talk about monatomics, they don't know what you're talking about because they're not taught anything about it. And when you melt down gold, you come up with the white powder of gold. And if you want to learn about more about the white powder of gold, I suggest you research David Hudson, and that's H-U-D-S-O-N, and that's lectures 1, 2, and 3 on the internet. Also, Barry Carter has some really good on the internet information. That's Carter, C-A-R-T-E-R. And even Bashar talks about how monatomics can boost spirituality. Also, a lot of information from Thoth, T-H-O-T-H, concerning safe quantities of taking this. One thing is clear, okay, the Anunnakis get their longevity from, well, they naturally had thousand-year lifespans, but it was dwindling. This monatomic gold, well, it doesn't attack disease cells. It reprograms your whole system, cleans your DNA. According to David Hudson, he's cured stage 4 cancer with it. I mean, this is a big, big subject. And it's one that you never really hear anything about. I mean, people come up with natural cures and they wonder why they work. Like the Budwig diet for treating cancer. Budwig, I think she won some Nobel Prizes for her research, but we hear very little of it. And it was basically based on flaxseed oil and cottage cheese. Well, it turns out that the cottage cheese just kind of helped activate what was in the flaxseed oil, but what's in the flaxseed oil is monatomic. Okay. Or like in Romania, they've got an ancient recipe where they take an aloe vera plant and squeeze the juice. You take the juice with some honey, it cures about 90% of stomach ailments. Well, what they didn't know is that the aloe vera plant, which, by the way, is given to us by the Pleiadians, contains monatomic elements. So there's even trace quantities of monatomics in a pure vegetarian diet. However, when you take a little bit more dense quantities of this, this is what produces longevity. And when the Anunnaki tweaked their DNA, which we used to have 12 strands of DNA, or were capable of having 12 strands of DNA, it cut us down to activating with two. And not only that, but they limited our lifespans so that we weren't really able to figure much out in one lifespan. And thus, they have a huge advantage over us, not only in the fact that they're trying to operate behind the scenes, have always been here, manipulating our government. They're the ones that created all the religions, they created the monetary system, and put the people they wanted in the power positions, some hybrids, some shapeshifters, some just normal, I guess, bloodline humans with more Anunnaki DNA. But the bottom line is that's kind of the Eclipse version of what's been going on. And it's interesting to note that the manipulation continues. I mean, even the fact that water, which is so important, most people's water has fluoride in it, and the fluoride calcifies the pineal gland. Okay, another little jewel you might want to write down. So you don't want to be drinking fluoridated water. The other interesting aspect is that now that we're in the new age, let's say, that there are natural ways by which sunlight helps to activate dormant DNA. And from the Starseed Dialogues, and that was from one of Patricia Corey's books, states that as you integrate and crystallize the third strand of DNA, which will bond with the other two via the same biochemical process of hydrogen bonding, key words here, hydrogen bonding, you'll be creating triangulation in the DNA. As you're aware, the triangle is the first form of your Euclidean geometry, and vibrationally, it represents the resolution of the perennial battle for balance in the polarity of two. And interesting to note, I think, that the way that our DNA is being activated is at the molecular level through the in the cellular level is through water. And but they also state that, however, with the acquisition of new codes coming through in the language of light, the waters of your being are becoming imprinted with hyperdimensional blueprints that will awaken and restructure the scattered light filaments lying dormant within you. This is a higher form of order and design than the hexagonal water crystals that you see in certain images. It is the sacred geometry of your evolution into light beings. So this is very important stuff here, because we're talking about, you know, large portion of the population getting out of hand, not operating within the frequency band that the controllers would like to see it. And thus, I'm also bringing up the idea that they don't miss a trick, okay? Because this is all happening, you notice the hydrogen bonding is so very important. If you go to Joe Imbriano, that's I-M-B-R-I-A-N-O, Joe Imbriano has got information concerning the new 5G system that they want to install. And that has to do with the 60,000 watt, I think, gigahertz or 60,000 gigahertz system, which he says is exactly the precise frequency of your water and air molecules and how they function. So it disrupts the function. It also affects the bonding between the oxygen and the hemoglobin in your system. So it's affecting this bonding process. Also, because it affects the air molecules at the electron level, it will create depleted oxygen. Well, as I said at the top of the show, hyperoxygenation, like pranayams, yogic breathing, actually activates junk DNA. So the new 5G system will actually work to deter all that. It will work towards depleting your oxygen. And if we already know that many of our cities have like only like 17% oxygen, like we're on a danger level with oxygen anyway. So the bottom line is, and a lot of people with a compromised immune system, which is a lot of people, they're going to have more depleted oxygen, more compromised immune systems. And not only that, but the 5G network also messes up the bonding process of our higher evolutional process. I want to definitely point that out. And Joe also recommends carbonyl iron, which he says is a microwave absorber. And he also recommends carbon 60, which is an olive oil, because it attracts metals and eliminates them from the body, because we're really being poisoned with metals as well. I might also point out that visualizing a violet color around your aura is another method that you can use to neutralize some of this 60,000 gigahertz frequency that will be coming from these cell towers that they want to put up about every 500 meters or so, because they don't travel long distances. And virtually being in an environment of 5G is kind of like being in a TSA scanner 24/7. So that's the challenge. And I guess we'll be having more information concerning that as time goes on. But clearly there's always very subtle effects and coordinated efforts to keep the frequency of humanity in a certain particular frequency range. And of course, largely motivated from fear. I'd also want to take a little bit of time on tonight's program to get into some yoga, because we eat yoga, of course, a combination of information from the yoga masters and extraterrestrial information. And I'd like to share with you some brief teaching from Sri Swami Satchidananda. And as he states, you came alone just to grow. The world has been created for us to understand, to make use of, and to grow. We can't run away. The whole world is a hot pot. Wherever we go in the cosmos, we're going to be cooked by our experiences. So we should accept this until we're roasted well. Acceptance of the divine will makes us joyous and peaceful. To others, it seems, my God, what suffering he has. But to ourselves, we say, okay, that's the way you're roasting me. Go ahead, do it. The world is really not terrible or imperfect. Actually, it's perfect. You're being manufactured here, much better than any Detroit factory manufacturing new cars. You're being refined. If you understand the world in this way, why try to run out of it? Once you become well-roasted by the experiences in the world, you'll be unattached and say, now I'm happy. Then you can advise others. Don't worry, you'll soon be roasted fully too, and you'll be happy like me. If you know the purpose of suffering, to burn up your ego, you'll even rejoice in it. Suffering is a way of purification. You heat your mind and body to transform it, burning out the undesirable impurities. Just as gold ore is repeatedly heated and cooled to raise its purity, all individuals are purified by the heat of suffering, so accept suffering if it comes. This is austerity, but you need not go looking for pain. You should avoid causing pain either to yourself or to others. You should not do violence to your body in the name of spiritual practices. Some do that, piercing the body, walking in fire, and undergoing hardships, but your body is given you for good reasons, and you should not purposefully harm it. If pain comes, think of it as purgation. You need adversity to know the truth. If you encounter adversity, realize that these are the knocks and bumps that encourage people to be yogis. To know good, you should know what bad is. This is life. Accept its lessons. Accept suffering for the happiness of others is dedication. If suffering comes, accept it with joy. Thank God and the person who sent it. Salute that person. Touch his feet. But don't become like that person and bring suffering to others. Learn the lesson from pain. It is a warning about some mistake you made. If there is pain, go to its cause. After all, what is pain? All suffering and pain is just losing happiness. You need the suffering to find out why you lost the happiness. Wanting is what causes unhappiness. People want things to be happy. When you don't want things, all things you don't want you. The things you want are like shadows. When you run, they run ahead. You run faster and faster after your own shadow. Certainly, you're never going to catch it. If you want things, they'll keep ahead of you because they're part of you. But if you are contented, all things will come to you. Walk toward that light and all the shadows will follow. If you get tired of seeking happiness by running after it, renounce all that. Turn around and walk toward the sun. And slowly look over your shoulder. The shadow you were chasing is following you. The world will be after you if you're not after the world. That's the secret. To your surprise, you will see that everything is waiting for you. Name, fame, money, praise, position, people, everything. If you are content, even your daily needs will come. You don't need to work for that. A person who is totally free from wants will not be like a dummy doing nothing. He will be used in some way or other by the higher will to bring benefit to humanity. That higher power will take him over. He will still be doing things, and he will be taken care of by the higher will through other friends and people. You don't need to worry about you. Your car never says, come on, fill me up. I'm low on gas and oil. That worry is yours because you want to use it. So the cosmic consciousness, which you call God, or the natural forces that runs through everything everywhere, also runs through you. It takes care of everything, including you, if you don't block it. You have free will to do what you want. If you do something only for your own sake, the reaction comes back to you. This reaction is called karma. If you do things in the proper way, you won't have to face the karma. A selfless action won't bring any karma, but selfish action always brings karma. This is why you were given free will. Below the human level, you were given a lot of experiences, a kind of education by the Mother Nature, who has been your teacher during all evolution. In your present life, you have free will, and you're being tested. You can choose to act selfishly and create more karma, or live for others' benefit, which is the higher will and does not create karma. In the highest understanding, you never had any karma, and you don't need to worry about facing your past karma. The person who performs karmic acts and undergoes the reaction of that karma is your mind. That isn't you. You are the pure self. Once the mind experiences the God within, there's no more karma. It's all burned. But until the mind experiences the true self, the mind is still involved in actions and has to face the reactions because it still has desires. Desires make you act. When the action is performed, the reaction is always there. That's why Lord Buddha said that desire is the root cause for everything. May I clarify that to say that selfish desires are the root cause? It's impossible for the mind to be without any desire. If there's no desire in the mind, there's no mind at all. The mind is like a rock pile. Take all the rocks away and there's no pile. Likewise, the mind is nothing but a bundle of desires, past, present, and future. The mind of desires is nothing but an illusion, a maya. A piece of cloth is made of many threads. Pull the threads out one by one, where's the cloth? The chair is made of wood. Take away the pieces of lumber, the chair is gone. Mind is like that, just a bundle of desires. If there are no desires, there's no mind. That's what is called transcending the mind. The mind becomes so calm, no desires are expressed. Desires are still there, but they are not functioning. If you don't feed the mind selfish desires, they will slowly die. Desires for the benefit of others do not create further desires, but personal desires constantly create others, which do not allow the mind to remain calm. If selfish desires are fulfilled, you will swing to the positive side, which is called excitement. If unfulfilled, you swing to the negative side, depression. But with selfless desires, it doesn't matter. You don't swing with the results. You're always happy with what you're doing. Untie yourself. Every personal attachment is a knot that binds you. You don't have to give up anything in this world, only your attachments to them. You may possess things, but don't let them possess you. And don't hoard things, having more than you need. You won't know which to use, where to keep them, how to take care of them, and all this will disturb your mind. If you have too many clothes in the closet and you want to go somewhere in a hurry, you'll waste hours because you don't know what to wear. If you just have one or two items, take one, wear it, and go on. As the Tamil sage Tarun Valnuar has said, from whatever things you detach, you are not affected. It's the attachment that affects you. If you're detached from things, your peace is maintained. A person who lives a simple life with the bare minimum is free from bother. To have maximum and endless joy, learn to be non-attached. It doesn't mean ignoring people or having no feelings about them, but avoid selfish attachment. If I dress you hoping to get a little fame or a few more disciples, then I'll be either excited or disappointed, depending on what happens. If more people come, I'll get excited. If nobody comes, I'll become disappointed. Either way, my peace of mind is disturbed. But if I'm free from that selfish attachment, I can still care for you, yet not be disturbed no matter what happens. Suppose somebody gets burned in an accident. Will I feel sad? Yes, I will, and I will do anything possible to save the person or do anything that is helpful, but without losing my peace. If I lose my peace when I see another in pain, then I will need somebody to help me also, and I can't help anyone. You can't bring peace to others unless you first have peace yourself. And that's from To Know Yourself, the essential teachings of Sri Swami Satchidananda. And as we talked at the top of the show, who we are, where we came from, well, we went into some detail about our extraterrestrial heritage. And with respect to who we are our higher selves. And a portion of our higher selves split off and became what we are in this incarnation. And in this incarnation, whether consciously or unconsciously, we're on the process of becoming self-realized. And again, this is a concept that most people don't even know. Most people don't even know they have a higher self. And that's who they really are. And one of the things I'll try to offer in ET Yoga at the end of the show is the Who Am I technique, which I will share later, a little bit later. And it's designed basically to have you have that experience of that flash of who you really are. And as Satchidananda said, when you take away all the desires from the mind, there's nothing else there. Doesn't mean that you don't still exist, because the higher you or the big I kicks in when the little I turns off. Wanted to also pass on a few other little tidbits of information regarding vegetarian diet. And vegetarian diet, interesting to note that in one of Patricia Corey's books, No More Secrets, No More Lies, she states that after you have six strands of DNA fully activated and connected, your body won't assimilate meat. And recommended a long time for people to work toward vegetarian or vegan diet. One of the basic fundamental principles of sound health is postulated by Bashar, which include pure water, oxygenation like yoga pranayams, elimination of stress, exercise, detoxification, and working towards a vegetarian or vegan diet. Another little tidbit of information for those who are pork eaters. Where do pigs come from? Pigs are a combination between humans and a wild boar. So in point of fact, there's a certain amount of cannibalistic activity involved in that process, not to mention that meat basically is a lower vibration. A few people have commented and asked about this, the Mandela effect. I'd like to state that what's basically happening as we speak is that there has been a merging of two timelines. And it's not this or that, it's this and that. And if you don't know about the Mandela effect, you might want to, you know, study it. It's more of a matter of interest or to figure out if you're which timeline you're actually from, because you're not from both. If you're from the old timeline, you'll notice if you look at a map of the globe, you'll notice that first thing will stand out to you probably will be that South America is about 1,900 miles east of where it was in on the old Earth. And then from there, lots of other things. There's hundreds and thousands of discrepancies between the old timeline and the new, which many people have talked about, but they can't come to any seemingly understanding because you have to understand there's been a merging of two timelines. And eventually you'll figure out that even the location of this planet is not the same as where the old Earth was. You can find actually proof of the what's called the Mandela effect. There are examples on the internet of old maps of the Earth which show South America from the old timeline. But the new timeline's predominant. But there still are millions of people here on the planet that are aware that things have changed. And it's not talked about in the newspaper or anything. It's pretty much all be figured out on your own. One of the things you'll figure out if you really get further into the subject is you'll find on YouTube Carl Sagan, one of the top astronomers of his time, and talking about location of the Earth, location of the Earth being on the outer edges of the Milky Way galaxy. Well, guess what? We're not on the outer edges of the Milky Way galaxy anymore. We're actually more towards the center. So even the location from the perspective of the old Earth people has changed. And if you're one of the people that doesn't notice any of these changes, it's not a problem or an issue. It just means that you're from this timeline, which is the way things have always been. The globe hasn't changed. Nobody's changed the verses in the Bible. Nobody changed the products that you see with different names. Nobody's purposely changed some of the storylines from the movies that you remember. Because this is the way it has always been in this particular timeline, which is still predominant. But there are aspects of the old timeline here as well. Like if you're from Manhattan, you may remember that there was only one bridge and one ferry that went to Manhattan. And in point of fact, there's four. And the four have been there for the last, I don't know, 50 years or so. So it's kind of one of those, it's a paradox. And but one of the cool things I find about it is that you can find that you have some connection with a large group of people out there who are from the old timeline and weren't moved for no reason. There's a reason for everything. So I think that's a really a positive aspect of this whole scenario. I know there are certain people that have experienced some of the more negative things like they find that they had kids or in the old timeline, but they don't in this one, and vice versa. It's for some people, it may even look like a hardship, but the bottom line is overall, I see it as a very positive effect. A subject that you may want to delve into, not that you have to. And it's irrelevant in one respect in that, like karma, doesn't matter what your old karma is. What really matters is what your beliefs are now. And also, we get a lot of, people that do talk about Andara crystals and their positive experiences that they've had with them. I highly, highly recommend Andara crystals, like the monatomic well, they come from a monatomic field. So, I mean, this is they're interdimensional. This is the highest frequency known on the planet, as far as I'm aware, and dark crystals. And it's very much closely associated with the white powder of gold. Now, the should also note here that, as I mentioned earlier about Hiki and using the white powder to create the longevity, David Hudson's process of melding gold is similar to their process. Now, the Philosopher's Stone is slightly different. Philosopher's Stone actually isn't really a stone. It's like feta cheese. And cosmic awareness, if you can find it, it's very difficult to find this information, but he has actually, he stated like how to make the Philosopher's Stone. I don't mind sharing that with you briefly. You need, actually the secret, the ingredient is urine. And human urine is the secret to the Philosopher's Stone. And basically you put urine in a round flask, something that doesn't have corners. Eventually you're going to cork it. And when you cork it, don't use a rubber cork. You use a wooden cork. You fill the urine in the flask during a lunar eclipse. And then you let it sit for 40 days. And then you seal the flask and cork it. And flask needs to be kept at a temperature of 78 degrees minimum and for about 13 months. So, if you're interested in the subject, there's something to try. It's challenging, depending on, when you might go on a vacation or this, that, and the other thing, to keep the temperature steady. And what will happen in the flask is it'll turn to a deep, deep, dark red. And eventually in the bottom of the flask will be something that looks like a chunk of feta cheese. And that is your Philosopher's Stone, which would be very similar to the white powder gold. It's basically very close in nature and in effect. And it's good for not only feeding the light body, but also for longevity. And also it doesn't attack disease cells. It reprograms them. It's high spin electrons. That's what ORMIS is, orbitally rearranged monatomic elements. I'd like to now share with you the, first I want to wish my listening audience my sincere best towards your attainment of full consciousness, perfect health and abundance. And I share with you now the Who Am I technique, where you take your full attention and put it in the center of your forehead and become that spot. And then you ask the questions, who am I? And you can do that once or 10 times or whatever feels normal. If you're in a very high place and you're asking that question, who am I? You're going to feel probably some sensations. And then when you've got your full consciousness, you become that spot. Then you ask the following, or you state the following. I am not my body. I am not my internal organs. I am not my thoughts. I am not this spot. What spot?
I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part. It is time to become a part.